available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I am not David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, but I am Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And normally together, we make the Podcast of Champions. It's going to be a solo show for me today. We're going to do some previewing of Week 12, recapping Week 11, talk about what's going on. And unfortunately, my co-host, David Woods, is not going to be available. If you saw on the Twitters, he tweeted out, which was a great tweet, on Wednesday, pour a final one out for the big guy, Donald Woods, greatest of all time dad, 5 stars, 10 of 10, would be parented by again. And it's an awesome picture of Dave and his dad, Donald, just sort of like the Dave beard we got going on, and like the kooky glasses and the really funny look on his face, mouth open, and David got a pretzel in his mouth as a little kid. So it was a great one. So unfortunately, Dave's father did pass away, been, you know, battling illness and succumbed this week. So Dave and I have been talking. It's funny. We just kind of became friends just covering football and being out and recruiting. And that's how we start, you know, recruiting events. That's how we started this podcast. We just always seem to get along. And it was great. I love the chemistry that we have. And I think that's why the show has been as successful as it is. Our lack of info and insight a lot of the time and intelligence, but we get along well. And so people kind of like the banter. We've both gone through some personal crap for the last couple of years. And just being able to be in studio together and kind of like compare notes, it's something I've actually looked forward to a lot. So knew this was coming, and knew it wasn't going to be easy. So my good friend Dave, I just wanted to give a shout out to him. And sorry I couldn't be here on the show, but I'll do this one solo. He sent me his picks and stuff, so I'll try to get through everything that we normally talk about so we can get you guys a show. But we'll get David back next week, probably an early show next week because of Thanksgiving and stuff. So we'll see what his schedule's like. If he can do it. If he can't, I can do a solo again, or we'll figure something else out. But I just want to give a little shout out to our buddy, our friend, the heart and soul of the Podcast of Champions. He does all the work too, so I don't know how it's going to work today. David Woods. If you have questions or comments for us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. You can also call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast and the website pac12podcast.com. Over on the Reddit, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions, where you can chat with other POC listeners. And on the Apple Podcasting app, follow, rate us, give us that 5 stars. That's what we're looking for, the 5 stars. And if you do, our favorite one every week, we are going to give you a $100 gift card to Jockey. I've had to send out a bunch of those, sending them out this week. From last week's show. But yeah, Jockey's been awesome, and we love their partnership with the POC. All right, we do have 3 new reviews this week, I believe. This is Nice was one. This podcast is much like the Pac-12 itself. To win, it just has to be the least chaotic out of all of its competitors, and that's not hard because there's just not a ton of great top-level competition. With love, XOXOXO. We got some hugs and kisses from This is Nice. Thank you, This is Nice. This is a long one. Champs talking champs. This podcast is so well researched, so focused on football. I made up a superstar team full of inspirational Pac-12 coaches to truly describe what roller coaster you're in line for every Monday. We don't usually record on Mondays, but that's fine. At head coach, we have the one and only Paul Wolf. Nothing says success like the darling of Coug Nation pre-Rolo. The world is full of great men, and a great man is nothing more than what a strong mother makes him. Thank you, Dolores, for your years of motherly service. At defensive coordinator, we have Jerry Azzanero. Dave speaking. What would my UCLA juggernaut do without our earth-shaking man of men, leader of great secondary of the planet, of the greatest secondary on the planet, excuse me? Absolutely nothing, of course. At offensive coordinator, we have Kevin Sumlin running a pro-style offense because Khalil Tate has the equivalent speed of a seahorse. He wasn't a dark horse for the Heisman after 1,400 yards rushing. Special teams coordinator, we have Joe Avezzano. I don't know who that is. I wasn't even alive for this glorious tenure, but I assume this was a highlight for the Beavs. As a Coug, he says, insert big growl sound, we understand, thanks to our one-time genius coach that has a last name that resembles the skill, ingenuity, and physical prowess of a pug, and plainly resembles a pug, and of course, the other more recent inspiration that uncovered Bill Gates was behind it all. At head recruiter, we have Jimmy Lake. Just keep slapping those recruits in shape, buddy. Maybe Georgia Southern has a sister school for you. Thank you for following this conference of futility. May our future be full of strippers, monkey biting children, parody, and a return of Champagne Larry.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
All right, thanks, champs. Talking champs. And then the last one, we have entertaining. I unironically look forward to listening every week. The guys keep things interesting with their commentary on the state of the Pac-12. Feels like a good 30 to 50% of the runtime is dedicated purely to reading through joke reviews, begging for underwear gift cards, but most of the time, those are funny too. Would recommend to any Pac-12 football fan who wants to feel camaraderie and watching the conference implode on itself every year. Also, I don't want the gift card. I just want to shout out my good friend and Trojan fan, Chris C., who recommended the podcast to me. Go Bruins. Thanks, Entertaining, for that one. Entertaining, you might not want it, but you want it. Champs Talking Champs is a little much for my solo show to read all that. But I would say, Entertaining, yeah. You want to get a $100 gift card to Jockey? Just send us an email. Send one email to me, Ryan at uscfootball.com, and I will send that out to you. But and yes, I know part of the show ends up being us talking about reading our reviews. It's not just like, hey, we're stroking ourselves to read the reviews. They're usually really funny. So that's kind of why, like, the people that listen, I think both Dave and I love it. You know, we get it that people get into it and they have a good time with it. And we have a good time with it too. So if they weren't funny, we wouldn't read them all. But, and then we just sort of say we read them all because it's a five-star thing. It's like a, kind of our shtick. But luckily, they're mostly funny. If they started to go downhill and weren't funny anymore, I think we'd have to stop doing that. Okay, before we get into everything, just want to let everyone know about my bookie. My picks were not good this past week. We had one that lost by half a point, one that ended up in a push. So I lost a little money in my bookie account, but I'm still about double what I started with a few weeks ago. So I'm in good shape there. Actually, I have some cool stuff too I tried out this week where they have like free blackjack tournaments. If you just want to go on there, they give you a bunch of chips and you can kind of play for free and check them out. And of course, you can bet all of the Pac-12 games. And if you use the promo code PAC12 at mybookie.com, you can go check it out and get a free deposit match. It'll be a bonus, doubling your money for every bet you place. All you got to do is sign up using the promo code PAC12. So tons of games in the PAC12 we're going to talk about. But there's also some cool NFL stuff. This Sunday, two powerhouse offenses will meet. Kansas City Chiefs taking on the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys put up a whole bunch of points this last week. So do the Chiefs. It's funny. I have Dak Prescott in one league and I have Patrick Mahomes in the other, and they've both been sort of like meh, and they've had breakout games. So if you want to take a bet on any of those, you can go over to MyBookie, redeem your double deposit bonus, and you can bet on that game and basically use the free money you got and bet on that. And if you win, it's cool. If not, you still got the money that you put in there. But you can bet anytime, anything, anywhere with MyBookie and use that promo code PAC12 to help you out. Okay. I got a bunch of notes. And since Dave's not here, I can talk about anything I want. But there's some, you know, real breaking news. Jimmy Lake, he gone. So if you remember, that's the head coach of Washington. He, got suspended. We all thought that he was going to be fired. You know, Dave, I don't think really thought he was should have been fired because he liked his, the idea that Washington punted when they were down eight and there was 2 minutes left in the game, and you know, it's fourth and long. Like you don't want to have to go for it in that situation. Punting is smart, obviously. Being facetious, Dave was tweeting out and saying, Look, make no mistake about it. The only reason Jimmy Lake, or the main reason Jimmy Lake was fired is because he punted on fourth down when they were down 8 points, and there was no way to basically get the ball back against Oregon. So Jimmy Lake was suspended for a game. Then it came out that he is fired. So add the Washington opening to the mix. I think Dave had a funny tweet. Kyle Bonagora asked, like, what should they call the Apple Cup this year? And Dave said the Application Bowl, which is kind of funny. And at least at the time, Kyle said that was the leader in the clubhouse. So, yes, Jimmy Lake, Rolovich, both gone. The Apple Cup will feature, interim head coaches. Interesting to see where Washington goes. Obviously, it's a more prestigious job. Outside of the USC's and the Oregon's, it would be right up there, you know, kind of like with UCLA, I would assume. A lot of people feel it's a top 15 kind of job. This is a weird one as far as, like, only been on the, you know, basically like a year and a half he got there. And this is the handpicked guy, right, from Chris Peterson. So curious to see which direction the Huskies go. I don't see a ton of overlap between USC and Washington. I think there still could be some, be probably looking at, you know, there's probably a different pool overall of candidates, but, you know, both could be interested in a guy like, you know, Dave Aranda, Matt Campbell. Like, you know, I think those are names that are high on USC's list and probably be high on Washington's list. But another one bites the dust. Another head coach goes down, and we'll see which direction Washington goes. And it's definitely a silly season. And speaking of coaching changes, Jim Mora, we talked about, he took the job at Connecticut, but he did an interview with Bruce and Stu over at the Audible, and I thought it was good just to kind of hear his take on things. It's funny, you know, he felt like he didn't deserve to be fired from UCLA, and they haven't done well since he left. He's like, I went to 5 bowl games, you know, and they had one bad year, and, you know, he ends up getting fired. But I think he had to reflect a little bit and look around, like, why am I not getting opportunities? And he was a little gruff with the media. Sometimes he could be a little intense, he was saying, and he's trying to, like, you know, change that a little bit. And, I think it's one of those things where you learn. If you remember, you know, just coming from the NFL to college, he was learning about all the politics and things you have to do. I think when Ed Orgeron, like, was, you know, when he took the Ole Miss job, you're trying to control everything and all that. Then, the next time you get a head coaching job, you're like, okay, I can ease off of this, ease off of that. It sounds like Jim Mora is going to be in the same boat from the interview, but definitely go check it out. But the interesting aspect of it, you know, this is the former UCLA coach, obviously. The interesting aspect is, you know, him talking about being on staff right now. So he's an assistant coach for UConn right now. Now, he's saying he's trying to stay out of the way. He's going to the games. But what it allows him to do is get out on the road and recruit for UConn right now. So he's the next head coach and is in their early recruiting. And I think that can be a huge thing. And the fact, I hate the early signing period timing. I don't like December, middle of December. Like, the season's just over and you're going to sign everybody. Like, you're still getting ready for bowl games and all that stuff. I'd love to see, like, an August early signing period where just, you know, that quarterback that's been committed for 2 years, he can sign. But you don't need everybody to sign on December 15th. You know, that just doesn't make much sense to me, especially because silly season, the coaching search stuff's going on. Now people are going to be firing coaches even earlier. And what Jim Mora is doing is going to be probably copied as well. If you can bring in someone early, and, you know, it might help the coaches that are just out of work. It's certainly harder if you're going to try to get a coach that's working right now to leave their current job. Now, we've seen that happen at Texas Tech with McGuire leaving Baylor, but he wasn't a head coach. If you're trying to get, you know, Aranda out of Baylor, he's probably not leaving before the end of the season. But if you could get him and you could put him on your staff now, he could get out there and recruit for the next class. And that's a huge advantage. So Jim Mora being out there recruiting, I think it's a big deal. It's nice that you can do that, but I don't know, you know, if you hired Bob Stoops, he could do that. If you hired Chris Peterson, you could do that, but you got to get someone that's out of work or get them to leave their job early. But I just wanted to share that. I thought that was interesting with Jim Mora. As far as the college football playoff rankings go, Oregon is still number 3. And Utah is number 24. Those teams play this week. So we'll see kind of what happens there. There's actually some other breaking news that Chris Cartman tweeted out like pretty much right before I went to record this. Arizona State players were involved in a two-car accident after practice. So he said a traffic accident involving two cars that were being driven by ASU football players occurred as they were returning from the practice fields. So the freshman defensive end Joe Moore, defensive back T. Lee, Stanley Lambert, Jalen Connors. There's a few other guys, but there were some injuries. Conyers had to be taken to a local hospital. So apparently they used to do buses and stuff, and now they're doing – so before the pandemic, they would take coaches were driven roughly half a mile from the facility to the practice field on buses and golf carts. Now players are responsible for getting themselves there, and they'll carpool for the short drive. But that might be reevaluated now that this accident happened. But I just want to let people know what was going on with that. But thanks to the reporting from Chris Cartman, I thought I'd share that. As far as some other news, John Canzano has addressed and has been harping on the quality of some of the ESPN broadcasts and when they're broadcasting Pac-12 games. And he did some research, and it comes down to the TV truck, apparently. So they have like ESPN's like number 5 truck or something for these games. And they said, I guess the truck's not that old, but a lot of the equipment that's inside of it is or was. So they didn't really pinpoint exactly what was going down as far as what's going on in the truck, but they did replace or upgrade a lot of the equipment there. And, it seems like that what was going on. It just didn't look like, if you missed some of these, the broadcast just didn't look like they were in HD. So nice reporting by Canzano, and we'll see this weekend if it makes a difference. I'll have to look, let's see what would be ESPN game. So ESPN had, that would be the Arizona State, Oregon State game. So that's the late night game, 7:30 PM. That fifth truck or whatever, I believe it was the fifth truck, will be up in, Corvallis. We'll see if, the quality gets better. So let us know what you feel like. As far as the division races go, the two favorites are Oregon and Utah. Obviously, Oregon would clinch a spot in the championship game if they beat Utah this weekend, or Arizona State beats Oregon State, and then Utah would win the South with a win over Oregon, or Oregon State beats Arizona State. So those are the two important games for the division race. And of course, the championship game is going to be Friday, December 3rd at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. So that should be a lot of fun. Bowl bids. So Arizona, we got a couple more that secured bowl bids this past week. ASU, Oregon, Oregon State, UCLA, and Utah have all clinched bowl eligibility. Washington State, if they can get a win this weekend, they would clinch. USC and Washington each need 2 wins, but no, USC has 3 games. Washington has 2. Cal has 3 games left also, but they need to win all 3. And then Arizona, Colorado, and Stanford are all eliminated. So it's kind of the news and notes of what's been going on. Now we got to do our
Pac-12 Roundup.
Okay. So this is going to be a lot to do with me kind of doing the sounds and going back and forth and talk about what was going on. So there was a bunch of games. What I ended up doing as far as, I guess you could say, the power rankings, just pretty much kept them the same. I think this is one of those situations where if you look at the standings, the teams at the top of the North, Oregon, Oregon State, they won. Those are the teams we had higher. The teams at the top of the South, Utah, Arizona State, and then, UCLA, they also won. And all the other teams lost or didn't play. So there was talk. I mean, Dave and I both talked about switching Washington and California. We had Washington 1 spot above Cal, but Cal didn't get to play. Washington's actually ahead of Cal in the standings, but I think Cal's look better now. But because they had the week off and then they had that terrible game against Arizona, it's hard. I would my gut says put Cal above Washington, but as of right now, we're going to keep it the way it is. But let's go to our number 12 team.
Stanford Cardinal.
And they were taking on, or they're on the road taking on...
Oregon State Beavers.
And we have Oregon State at number 5, by the way. Well, you know, we could have... Washington State did lose. We could drop them down. But, man, it's tough because they won that. But, okay, we'll keep it like it is for now, and we'll, like, change it again, you know, when David comes back. So this was Oregon State rolling past Stanford, 35-14. Like you said, they became bowl eligible. So Stanford's really banged up. Ari Patu was the quarterback for the Cardinal. So he had his first career start. And Tanner McKee, who should be back, you know, next week. But they just couldn't find any sort of offensive rhythm. 70 yards of offense and 5 first downs in the first half. So, yeah. I mean, I think probably a little throwing still too much for Chance Nolan and Oregon State. But, you know, this was a... It was that there was an 80-yard touchdown drive, and then another touchdown off a fumble, a Stanford fumble that kind of put things away late. So they had 218 yards rushing, you know, against Stanford, and Nolan threw 25 times for 257 yards, and he ended up having 2 touchdowns. So congrats to the Beavs. They got things right, and that's the only game that I got right as far as covering the spread goes. So Dave and I both had OSU. For the week, I went 1-3-1. Dave went 2-2-1. The first game, well, we'll talk about this one next. This next one is the one we had different and end up getting it wrong. But our number 11 team.
Arizona Wildcats.
They were hosting our number 2 team.
Utah Utes.
And, yeah, so this was one of those where you're like, huh, what's Utah's favored by 24? Are they going to go into Arizona and, like, light them up? It was 38-29, and it, you know, it was a close game. So that's one of those things where you're like, what is going on here? Now, Tavion Thomas didn't go for Utah. They opened the game with a touchdown. That's their 5th straight time that they scored a touchdown on their opening drive. But Arizona just kind of made plays throughout this one. So there was I think it was 4th and 5, and Plummer scrambled for a 43-yard touchdown. You know, and you're like, whoa. So when you're trying to cover a 24-point spread, stuff like that happening where most likely you stop them on 4th and 5 and you get the ball at midfield or whatever, and then you make it a 2-touchdown game. Well, no. Plummer scrambles away and gets a touchdown. And it's a huge switch switch of momentum. You know, Utah had a 50-yard pass. I think it was to Britton Covey, wiped out because of a holding penalty. You know, Arizona goes on and scores, and they went up 14-7 in this game. Things just were not going Utah's way early on, and they hung on to win this one. But Arizona was scrappy, and they really tried. Tried their best in this one. And I feel like it's one of those situations that Arizona played pretty well, and Utah just had a few things not quite go their way. You feel like they're going to win comfortably, even though there was chances for Arizona, but you weren't going to win in that blowout fashion that Utah's been doing lately. You feel like they've been, I mean, that's why I picked Utah the way they were. They were blowing these teams out. And but just early on, you could kind of tell, like, they weren't, you know, it's like you're playing poker and like you're just like, yeah, I'm playing pretty well, but I'm not getting the cards, like the turn card's screwing me over, whatever it is. Like, just it wasn't quite going Utah's way, and it was for Arizona. Now, they couldn't get their second win, but they were definitely a feisty team again and kept it close. All right, let's go. Next up, we have our number 10 team.
Colorado Buffalo.
And our number 6 team,
UCLA Bruins.
This one was both Dave and I picked Colorado. UCLA was favored by 17, and we were wrong. UCLA wins 44-20. And thanks, Colorado, because, you know, Colorado, you were up 20-7. Came out early, scored an early touchdown, pick off Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Everything's going their way. First half, they did really well. Moved the ball. They scored 20 points in the first half, 264 yards, and pretty much shut it down after that. The second half, the Bruins scored their first four touchdowns on their first four drives, 34 unanswered points in a route to the blowout. So, you know, you're thinking when you're getting 17 points and you're up 20-7 at halftime, you're going to do pretty good and cover this game. That's the kind of week it was for the picks, where it's just like, nope, you were up big, but that's not the way it's going to go. UCLA ended up having 219 yards in the third quarter alone. So this was, and Colorado had 117 yards in the second half and didn't score at all. So yeah, tough situation for the Buffs. We saw them just, you know, their offense get way better the last couple of weeks. And I felt like it was going to be enough to keep this within, you know, 17 points of UCLA. But man, they just completely fell apart. And yeah, so the Buffs lose again. And UCLA gets back in the win column. So good for the Bruins. Okay, next up we had our number 9 team.
USC Trojans.
They were going to go on the road to take on our number 8 team.
California Golden Bears.
But it was COVID postponed. So no game. December 4th, like we said, last week's show. So those teams didn't play. We didn't move them in the rankings at all. Next up, we had our number 7 team,
Washington Huskies.
And they were hosting our number 4 team,
Arizona State Sun Devils.
This was the one that was a half point that we got wrong. So Washington was getting 5.5 points. And, you know, so Arizona State was minus 5.5. Arizona State won by 5 points. They won 35-30. Now, this and Arizona State was winning by 2 touchdowns, you know, late in the game, under 2 minutes left. So it looks like a backdoor cover, right? It looks like, well, then Washington scores a garbage touchdown, and that's how they, you know, Arizona State didn't cover the spread. But this was Washington's game from the very beginning. It was 14-0 early. Arizona State was, you know, down 14-0. They're trying to put a drive together. Goal to go situation, and Daniels got stopped on 4th and goal, you know, and so it's still 14-0. You know, ASU cut it to 17-7 at the half, and neither offense really did much in the beginning. But then you started to see Rashard White get going. He cut the lead to 17-14 with his touchdown. But, you know, Washington came right back. They scored again, 24-14. But as you say, then Arizona State, this is a really weird sort of sequence. So they're still down 2 scores, right? They're down 10 points. 81-yard drive that took 20 plays, 9 minutes off the clock. So they had, you know, a long third down conversion. There was a fourth down. But Daniels runs it in, and it's a field goal game. And, you know, so they get the, you know, Washington didn't do anything on offense. White scores again, and now Arizona State has the lead. So a minute, 11 left on the clock. Arizona State's up 28-24, right? So no way they're going to cover this one. Well, Washington throws a pick six. Merlin Robinson returns it for a touchdown. So now you're like a minute left or whatever, or, you know, 45 seconds left or whatever. Arizona State's up 35-24. So now they're up 11. And you're like, you're definitely going to cover. But then somehow Washington goes 63 yards in just 3 plays, and they cut it to 35-30. So now the cover's no longer in play, and we're screwed on that one. But they get the onside kick, and try Hail Mary. It doesn't work. But ASU did score 21 unanswered points, and that's kind of where this game went. But just absolutely crazy when you think about what was going on here. Like, how did this go down like this? But Washington had the early lead. A lot of chances to kind of hold on and win this game. ASU has been reeling. They did beat USC, but other than that, they've just not looked very good. But once White started rolling for ASU, and we saw both teams just kind of go on drives where you're just going to run the ball. But ASU did a little bit better, and they get the win. But that was a really weird game. And if you just watch the last like minute and a half, you're like, what is going on here? All right, we got one game left, but number six, we had UCLA. We already talked about number five, Oregon State. We already talked about number four, Arizona State. We already talked about, and we definitely could have moved this team down, but we're just going to keep it the same. We'll change it next week when David gets back. We have number three,
Washington State Cougars,
and they were taking on the number one team,
Oregon Ducks.
We also got this one. Well, this was a tie. So this was Oregon hosting Washington State, favored by 14 points. We both had Washington State and ended up being a 14-point win and a tie. We actually sort of got lucky because there was garbage time touchdown for Washington State. But we'll kind of go over that a little bit. You know, Jaden DeLora, I think where Washington State lost this was on the first drive. So they had a first drive, a 70-yard catch and run with Calvin Jackson Jr. And this was just the second play of the game. But, you know, when DeLora like ran for the pylon, he loses the ball and it goes out of the end zone for touchback and Oregon takes over. That was sort of like if Washington State could have punched that in, you know, on the very first drive of the game, I think the whole game is going to turn out differently. But you know, as it turns out, you know, first quarter, the Ducks dominated. They end up outscoring Washington State by 14, and it's 14-0. But, you know, give the Cougs credit. They did come back. But it would have been a different story, I think, if they had that early touchdown. You know, they come back and actually have it tied at halftime. But then it was sort of just like, you know, Oregon's up by 10. Maybe then it goes back down to 7. But then Oregon, you know, keeps putting up points. They're up 31-17. You know, they got an interception. They punch it in again, and now it's like 38-17, and it just looks like Oregon's running away with it in the fourth quarter. Like I said, Washington State did get a garbage time touchdown to make it 14. So really, you know, the tie of the cover came late. But to me, this was that first drive of the game. If Washington State was able to punch that in, I think it changes the complexion of the entire game. But it's just that early play. And I've seen this in a lot of Pac-12 games, which is weird. That early play, you know, beginning of the game, first couple drives, it just seems like to turn things. Now, we saw the Colorado game, right, where it wasn't that way. Colorado was dominating the first half, and then things just completely switched. But it's usually when, like, a team that's favored is up, you know, doesn't do really well in the very beginning, and you're like, oh, you know, Oregon's trying to cover 14 points. Washington State goes 75 yards the first drive and punches it in. It's like, oh, that's a little bit different. Colorado, with teams like that, when we saw them fall apart, like they've just had a tendency to do that at times. They would fall apart and things wouldn't look good. But just those ones where you're just not sure how it's going to turn out, a lot of times we can watch that first 5 minutes of the game and go, okay, you can see the way this one is going. And I think that was what happened for Washington State. They needed to make that big play. But only five games from week 11 because of the COVID postponement. That game for USC Cal is now announced 8 p.m. on December 4th. So after all of the championship games, it'll be on FS1. I'm sure lots of people will be watching that. You're just like, all the championship games are done. Oh, let's watch USC and Cal. Maybe one of those teams is fighting for bowl eligibility. Maybe neither of them will have it at that point. So that'd be kind of funny. So like I said, Dave went 2-2-1. I went 1-3-1. Both of us still under 500, but Dave's got a decent lead on me still. Okay, let's go to our picks for week 12 against the spread. David sent me his. Let's see. So let me go. We can do our sounds and everything. So first up, we have
Arizona Wildcats.
And they're on the road taking on
Washington State Cougars.
This is a November 19th. This is a Friday night game, 6 p.m. on the Pac-12 networks. It's tough to do all of these things. Like I would do part and then Dave would do part. So yeah, 6 p.m. on the Pac-12 networks. Washington State is a 15-point favorite. Dave's taking Washington State in this one. And, you know, I get it. They're the number three team. Arizona's coming in at our number 11 team. I think that Arizona is going to be feisty yet again. They've just been feisty a lot lately, given teams fits. They covered against Utah. Now that was at home. This is on the road against Washington State. And I think Jaden Delore has been, great that he throws touchdown passes all the time. He's probably not going to get that fumble out of the end zone like he did against Oregon in this one. And, the fact that they're playing at home. But 15 points is a bunch. We've seen Arizona just kind of hang around. Am I going to be shocked if Washington State just blows them out by 30? Like, no. But I'm going to ride with Will Plummer in this one and see how Arizona does. Okay. That's our Friday game. So Dave and I have that one differently. Our Saturday games start off at noon on the Pac-12 Network.
Washington Huskies.
They'll be on the road taking on
Colorado Buffalo.
So like I said, first game on Saturday, and it is another Pac-12 Network game. Colorado is getting 6.5 points. So they're a home dog in this one. Two teams that we've seen have really inept offenses at times. Two teams we've seen completely collapse. They completely collapsed last week. Which team collapses this week? Dave is going with the Huskies. I'm going to take Colorado. Colorado at home. They've scored points the last 3 weeks. Now they didn't score in the second half. In last week's game against UCLA, but they're at home. I'm going to roll the dice and say that, jettisoning your offensive line coach has really helped, and they're going to score some points. But I just feel like either one of these teams could just fall apart on offense or both. But so if I'm going to get 6.5 points in a situation like that for a home team, I just don't think Washington's that good. Like they're getting some credit, which I don't think they deserve. So I'm going to go with Colorado. And Dave is going to take Washington. All right. Next up, we're going to get into a rivalry game. We have
UCLA Bruins.
They'll be in the Coliseum taking on
USC Trojans.
This is Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific. This will be on Big Fox. Our buddy Bruce Feldman is going to be on the sidelines for this one. UCLA is a 3-point favorite. Over the Trojans. So another home dog. You want to take those points at home with the Trojans? No. USC is an absolute mess right now. Both Dave and I are taking the Bruins, laying the 3. Jackson Dart will start in this one. So Keaton Slovis has some what they're calling a lower leg injury, and he has not been practicing. He didn't practice last week, and they're like pseudo bye. And Jackson Dart was announced on Monday that he'd be the starter, which is different than what Dante Williams has done. He usually doesn't announce that stuff. They're trying to get some sort of juice by having Dart start the game, but he's not looked that good in the games he split time with. And I'm not blaming any of the quarterbacks. It's just USC's offensive scheme isn't very good. Their defense has been bad. Now, UCLA's secondary is horrible, but I just don't think without Drake London, USC is going to be able to take as much advantage. UCLA is going to run the ball. USC's had trouble stopping the run. So I like the Bruins in this one. Chip Kelly gets the win. And that's, for your Chip Kelly, non-Chip Kelly fans, it's probably not good. But I like UCLA to win this one convincingly. I didn't talk to David about what he thinks, but I'm guessing he's probably in the same boat. Okay. Big game. You know what? Just because Dave's not here, I'll do his thing. The big game. But you know, they like to call big game, but it's, we'll say for David, the big game, we have
California Golden Bears
down in Palo Alto taking on
Stanford Cardinal.
So this is the next window of games, 4 p.m. Pacific, also on Pac-12 Network. Pretty much a pick 'em. They have Stanford or California as a 1.5 point favorite. Stanford seems to be in these kind of games where like 1.5. But Cal, yeah, coming in. They, of course, had the forced bye week because of all the COVID stuff. The previous time they played without Chase Garbers, you know, they were they got beat by Arizona, and it looks like both quarterbacks will be back. So that's good. I mean, without McKee, like, Stanford is terrible. Without Garbers, Cal is terrible. So you're going to see both of these guys play. Dave's taking the road underdog. I mean, the road favorite yet again. He's going to take Cal. I have a little faith. Once McKee comes back, I'm going to have some faith in Stanford. I do think they're butt. I think they're bad. I'm just not sure. If Cal had not had that week off and then the terrible time with all the COVID stuff, I love the momentum that Cal had, but I just don't know what kind of Cal team we're going to get. This just feels to me like a Stanford opportunity. Like, Cal was on a roll and they would have rolled in this game, but then they sort of derailed themselves with the COVID stuff. And I forget it's like Stanford's won like 10 of 11 or something there. Like, it's crazy the amount of games Stanford's won in this one. So I just have a gut that says Stanford. Plus, I need to catch up to Dave, so I'd rather go opposite him anyway if I'm not sure. I can completely see Cal coming in and just getting back to their form. We're like, hey, we got everyone back. We're scoring points. We look good. The defense looks better. All that stuff that we've seen from Cal. But this one is just one of those weird ones that I just feel like Stanford's going to play well. So probably wrong. I've been wrong a lot, obviously, this season. But I'm going to go with Stanford and take or get the 1.5 points. Okay. Obviously, the game of the week in the Pac-12, we have
Oregon Ducks
going to Salt Lake City, and they will be taking on
Utah Utes.
I kind of want to just fly to Utah for this one, but this is a 4:30 p.m. Pacific game, so starting half an hour after big game, the two of the rivalry games, and this is on ABC, so big game for the Pac-12, obviously very important. Both of these teams controlling their own destiny in the division. So if they can win, either one can win, they would clinch the division. Utah is a 3-point home favorite. Now, Dave switches this one up. He likes Oregon coming into Salt Lake City and getting the win. And I'm on the other side. I'm going to take Utah at home. I just love the way Cam Rising has been playing. I feel like this is a situation where, and we've just seen this a lot from him, that he can make plays with his legs, been very effective. They convert on these third and longs that you just haven't seen from Utah before. If things don't go right early on, it just seems before, like for Utah, if things didn't go right early in the downs, like your first, second down, they're punting. Now they have a chance. Like, they can make a big play on third and 16 where you're like, what? Like, where's that coming from? You know, I think both teams are tough and gritty. They can run the ball. I don't mind. The 3 points is fine. Like, I don't mind laying that. If it was more than 3, I think I would take Oregon. But the fact that it's 3, I'm going to go Utah at home. I think it could be a fairly convincing win. And what is the most Pac-12 thing? You know, like, Oregon's poised to go to the playoff. They're in the debates, talking about if they're better than Ohio State, better than Cincinnati, all that kind of stuff. They're number 3 in the rankings. This just feels to me like Utah's going to win this game, and then Oregon will win the Pac-12 championship game. That's what I'm thinking, but, you know, we will see. But Dave and I got that one differently, so we'll see what happens, but that's definitely the game of the week. And then one last game, the Pac-12 After Dark.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
They'll be in Corvallis taking on
Oregon State Beavers.
This is 7:30 p.m. on ESPN, and like we'll see, you got to see if that truck is indeed improved. The Beavs, they're a home dog, getting 3 points. I think I've picked Oregon State in like every game this year, and I believe they're 5-4 against the spread, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe they're 5-5. I don't remember. Yeah, because there's 10 games. Both Dave and I are taking Oregon State in this one. ASU, they've just not been the same. Jaden Daniels has not looked like he's regressed more than anything. When Rashard White's in the lineup, for sure. But Washington was handling them. And I think Oregon State's a better team than Washington. So give me Oregon State and points. Like, okay, you know, this is one I feel like. So the bets I made last week, I didn't get to share my bookie bets. I did a couple of double bets. I did a double bet on Oregon State and I won that one, which was nice. So I put 2 units on that one. I also put a double bet on Oregon and Washington State with Washington State, but that ends up pushing. So I did okay when I like had more confidence in the bet. I think the Oregon State one plus 3, I would put 2 units on probably. And I think I'm going to put 2 units on UCLA. So we'll see. Some of the other ones, you know, you're not super sure, but I think I'm going to do those two as far as like double units go and see if I can make some of that up a little bit. It helps when you hit one of the double bets and stuff. Okay. So that is it for our preview and recap. We're going to get to a bunch of questions after this break. All righty. Let's go to an email. So I'm going to have to bounce back and forth with all these. Reading, going through, producing the show. This is all fun to do by yourself. Bernie says, I just finished listening to your Week 10 review, which was excruciating considering how bad the conference is, in hopes of hearing a little about the basketball game tonight. So this was sent, this was last week. You know, the number 2 team in the nation going against the number 4 team in the nation. I think that was UCLA Villanova. I don't remember. But not one word. It seems you guys would rather dwell on garbage than exciting elite teams playing. Ryan, I will excuse you, as I know you have an aversion to anything not football. But Dave, I mean, not even a reminder to the Bruin family? Is this truly a podcast of champions? Shouldn't you at least acknowledge something the conference is actually good at? That's from Bernie. Here's the deal, Bernie. I think Dave is, he's tuned out of basketball. Like, you know, he liked UCLA when they were bad. Now that they're good, he's not into it anymore. So I don't think you're going to get much from him. It's funny. You look at his Twitter account. So he tweets about his father passing away. And then he's tweeting all about UCLA's basketball game later on that night. He's big into it. He's big into, you know, when UCLA's good, he's into it. We are not a basketball podcast. Like, if something crazy happens, we might mention it, but it just we're a football podcast. We're not a basketball podcast. We're the podcast of champions talking Pac-12 football, not anything else. If we could talk about a lot of stuff that the Pac-12 is good at, people don't care about. So there's other, you know, things you can do with your UCLA basketball. I think the Bro podcast talks about it. No Truck Stops, they like talking about basketball. That's not our thing. That's not been our groove. That's been our stick. I don't follow it at all. Like, I literally don't, follow basketball at all. So you wouldn't want to hear from me on what's going on with college basketball. But thank you, Bernie, for the email. Let's go to Steven, first-time listener. Thanks, Steven. Just listened to your podcast for the first time and found some of it puzzling. First of all, David seems to take shots at an Oregon team and coach that has been the best in the Pac-12 the last few years. Taking shots against the best team because your team sucks just makes you sound like a bitter fool. I think you just mean a bitter fool. And the whole narrative that USC Homer peddles, that USC is the only true elite team, is absolute trash. USC has been a wreck since Carroll, who I thought was a great coach. With the recruiting and development taking place, Oregon is only going to get better. I know it's hard pill to swallow for some arrogant USC fans. Hey, Steven. So I guess it's your first time listening. I think so. it's probably an LA-centric podcast because that's where Dave and I reside. That's where, you know, we've lived for a long time. He grew up here. He covered, you know, went to UCLA, covers UCLA. I went to USC twice, cover USC. But we talk trash about everybody, and the programs we cover probably more than anyone else. Yeah, so I wouldn't, you know, maybe listen a little longer, but I hope you don't think that either one of us are like homers. Now, he's going to talk about UCLA basketball like it's like the greatest thing ever, because that's just sort of his deal. You know, I cover USC. I'll talk about the team, but I'll give you the, you know, I'm not going to say Oregon is like a, like say Mario Cristobal leaves and you're going to say, hey, I'm Steven writing into the show. Is Oregon a better job than USC? I'll say, no, USC is a better job, and it's by a lot. And you're like, oh, Oregon's been better lately. And all, like, sure, all that stuff is true, but like, it doesn't mean it's a better job. And that's just, I'm going to give you my opinion on what's going on there. I think Dave probably thinks the UCLA job is better than some, not better than Oregon right now, but he might say it's better than Washington, and then other people would say Washington is better. And you know, there's, you could have some debate and stuff there. So I would say stuff like that. I will just tell you how I feel about what's going on. But you know, it's not about, we're like fans of these schools that are, and we're like mad at Oregon for being good or anything. We're just going to tell you like what we feel, but thank you for the email. Let's see. We have a text message from Brent. Hey guys, I've been hearing a lot of Beaver fans saying they want Jimmy Lake as a new defensive coordinator. And would that be a quote home run guy? I also was thinking potentially Keith Hayward, big time recruiter and former Beaver player. What are your thoughts? Brett, to be honest, I haven't looked too much into the Oregon State hot board as far as defensive coordinators. They fired Tim Tibisar, obviously, which, you know, I think kind of needed to happen. That there's been a lot of continuity on that staff with Jonathan Smith. And if one side of the ball is not getting it done, I mean, they get elite offensive line play and they can run the ball really well. You need a pretty good defense to kind of pair with that. And when your defense is just giving up chunks and chunks, you got to do something different. I think if you're going to get Washington's former head coach as a defensive coordinator, yeah, I'm cool with that. Like, I think that'd be great. And I like Keith Hayward a lot. I just know him personally through covering him at USC. I think he is a great recruiter. The fact that he's, you know, got connections there. Yeah, I think that would be a good one as well. But I, like I said, I haven't really dug into the hot board of stuff that's going on. And along the same lines, Kevin said, Ryan and David, with the firing of Tim Tibisar from Oregon State, the Beavers are looking to fill a spot at the end of the season. Is it more likely to see Trent Bray be elevated to full-time coordinator? Or with the history Jonathan Smith and Jimmy Lake have at Washington, could he possibly become the next defensive coordinator at Oregon State? There's always the possibility that they make an outside hire for the position as well. Of the three options, which is likely to happen? Thanks, Kevin. So yeah, you could do a promotion of Bray, but the fact that the defense has been that bad, I don't know. The continuity thing, you sort of want to get away from him. Now, I should talk to Angie Machado and kind of get her thoughts on this. I feel like just my gut is saying the Jimmy Lake thing, I don't know if that would happen. And, you know, I would like to see them do, you know, a national search and hire someone from outside the program and kind of mix up the defensive culture a little bit if you can. But, you know, like I said, Jimmy Lake was the head coach at Washington. If you can get him to Oregon State, which is, you know, if you're talking about head coaching jobs, Washington's better than Oregon State. But you get the head coach from a better school to come to your school to be defensive coordinator. I'm like, yeah, that. I mean, I think that would be a coup. I don't know if it would happen, but I haven't dug too much into it, like I said before. But thank you for the question. All right, let's see. We've got – why don't we do – we had a couple of voicemails. Why don't we play one of these? Here we go.
Oh, what's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. I'm thinking about Jaden Daniels and I want to know, you know, obviously right now it's not looking good, but I just want to know, you know, do you think that Daniels is just not good or do you think he's just straight up bad? You know, I'm just kind of wondering, just I really can't figure the guy out. I love him. Like, you know, I really like him. And I think that he, you know, still could maybe, you know, salvage his career if he stays another year. And I mean, I'll definitely be rooting for him really hard these next couple weeks. I'm really hoping he can kind of figure it out. But, you know, as of right now, it's looking like, you know, he's just kind of not that good. And, I just want to know also, you know, regardless if you think he's just kind of not good, if you think he's just kind of straight up bad, do you think that it's because of the coaching staff? I know, obviously, you know, if he is not good or bad, that's who he is. But I just want to know, do you think that he could have been good and would have been good if the coaching staff would have developed him? Because obviously they didn't. I know he's not playing well. I get that. But do you think that he would have played well if the coaching staff actually coached him up? So thank you, guys.
Evan, we always love your call. Thank you for calling in. I love the options he gives. Is he not good or bad? Hard to distinguish between those two. So in this past game, the Washington game, he was 10 of 16 for 90 yards. Probably still, I should have mentioned that in the recap. He had one touchdown, one interception. Dylan Morris on the other side was 16 of 28 for 151 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Like if I gave you those two stat lines heading into the game, like one of these is going to be Dylan Morris and one of them is going to be Jaden Daniels. Like I think I would have reversed them. They're not that different. I mean, 60 more yards passing or whatever, but you know, 28 more passes. Obviously Arizona State's trying to run the football. He looks like he's regressed. And I don't feel like in a lot of these situations, like you've seen him have success, right? Like you've seen him be in situations where, man, he looks good. Like that's Jaden Daniels is a future star in this league. I've seen this at USC a lot where like a guy looks good as freshman. Keaton Slovis looked great as a freshman. Why does he look kind of terrible as a junior? To me, I'm putting more of that on the coaching staff than on the player itself. Like if you've seen the player play well, they played well in college football, very similar situations. Now people know more about him. As the head coach or the offensive coordinator, or the quarterback coach, like you want to put these guys in a position to succeed. Now, if you put me or David out there and running the Arizona State offense, could I hand off to Rashard White and not trip over myself and hurt myself? Probably most of the time. But it's going to, I'm going to have a hard time completing passes, going through my reads, getting the ball where it needs to go and all that. But you've seen him do that. Like you've seen him be successful in college football games against crappy competition, good competition. You've seen him have some ups and downs or whatever, but you know he is capable of getting a ball snapped to him and throwing the ball over the field, finding open receivers, and making plays. Now, he's had drop. There's been drops. There's been other issues around it. It's not just his play. But I tend to look at, well, what the hell is a coach doing in this situation? And I would say I wouldn't throw this all on, say, okay, Jaden Daniels is trash. Like, I'm not going to say Keaton Slovis is trash. I've seen those guys not be trash. I've seen them play really good football. Are they in a good organization right now? Like, no, Arizona State, USC, they're both messes, right? Like, they're both, you know, coaches that aren't there anymore, you know, schemes that maybe people have caught up to and there hasn't been adjustments made or whatever. You know, especially at ASU when you have that kind of run game and you have a really good defense to go with it. I think it's a crime that his numbers have been the way they are. But to me, I'm pointing that more on the coaches than the kid himself. So just my opinion, Evan. But thank you for calling in. Let's go back to the emails. Bobby says, human sheep coat and Pac-12 officiating. So Ryan and Dave, I'm the one who thought the announcer said human sheep coat in reference to Drake London. And although I'm embarrassed that I misheard the announcers, I nearly cried laughing about it when I heard the podcast last week. So I think it was worth it. 100% Bobby, it was worth it. First of all, yes, you misheard it, but you could have easily wrote into us and said that as a joke, and we should have picked up on it that it meant human cheat code and not sheep code. But we were both taken aback. Plus, usually we're about an hour and a half into the podcast when we start reading these things, and our brains turn to mush. You guys should try it sometime. Like it is, it's not, you know, it's not super easy all the time when you're trying to do all these million things. And you're reading and you're just like thinking and all this stuff. And it just after a while, just talking, you go a little bit insane. And doing it by yourself, it can go a little bit insane. But anyway, he said, on another note, Pac-12 officials continue to be awful. Just from the Arizona State-Washington game, there was a fake punt where the Arizona State player nearly decapitated the Washington punter in what was clearly a launch and helmet-to-helmet at the end of the play. It wasn't even reviewed, and there was no targeting call. On another, Washington kicked an onside kick with 3 seconds left, and after the Arizona State player touched it, the ball, at least 6-7 seconds elapsed, but the clock only moved once the Washington player touched the ball, and somehow they had 1 second left. Granted, it didn't matter because Morris Morris'd, quote, Morris'd the next play, but it could have impacted the outcome of the game. Thanks, have a great day from Bobby. I didn't notice that one, Bobby, with the onside kick. Yeah, it's supposed to, like, it would have had to have been a super quick onside kick because as soon as it's touched, the clock would start. I believe that's how the rule works. I don't know if it's something where, yeah, I believe that's how it works, even with an onside kick. And, you know, punt targeting's weird to begin with. And then you put it on a punt play, it makes it even weirder. I think you just add more discrepancy, you know, just more, there's a wider range of things that could be called when it's a special teams play for whatever reason. So, but thank you, Bobby, for that email. Okay, next up, we got our buddy Hithliday, and his subject is Matthew 28:3. So if I look that up, modern English world or English Bible translates the passage as, his appearance was bright as lightning, and his clothing is white as snow. So that's Matthew 28:3. And he says, how do you boys suppose Moorhead, he's talking about Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator for Oregon, will respond to Scalise, and he's Morgan Scalise, the defensive coordinator for Utah, cover one blitzing on third down. So how are you going to respond to Utah's cover one blitzing on third downs? That's exactly the kind of podcast we are, Hithliday, breaking down real specific formations on, you know, what down and distance. Utah is a team that we've seen run a lot of man-to-man stuff, right? So they, you know, probably not going to have dropping three safeties, deep safeties. It starts up front with what Utah's doing. I think that there's some similar teams as far as, like, you know, you want to start in the trenches. I think Utah's a team that does that. I think Oregon's a team that does that. And I feel like the linebackers are always key for Utah's defense. They are asked to do a ton, you know, and they'll probably come after, you know, run blitzes. They'll probably come after, you know, Anthony, like you know, Anthony Brown. Like, I think you're going to see some stuff from the Utah's front seven. And they don't mind leaving guys on island and letting them play man-to-man. And you can get burned sometimes, for sure. But, you know, leaving one safety back there to kind of take care of things and let everyone else sort of do their deal, lock up guys as much as you can one-on-one and bring extra pressure, show pressure, and drop guys back into coverage. I think you'll see a lot of that stuff. But I'm not some expert on Utah's defensive schemes, I would say. But obviously, game of the week. Want to watch that one for sure. But thank you, Hithliday. This is Express from Expressway. Timeline for hires. When do you expect Washington and USC to make a decision on their hires? Yeah, well, I mean, Washington's came more out of the blue. Now, last time Washington made a change at head coach, they had their guy right away. USC's already been, you know, a couple months. The problem is, like, you have so little time between the end of the season and the early signing period. And, you know, for Washington, you've had longer time to kind of build the class. And you're probably going to see some decommitments. I mean, USC's seen them. Damani Jackson, the highest-rated player in California, was committed to USC. He's a Dante Williams guy. But there's so much uncertainty around the program. He's recently decommitted. USC is like number 9 in the Pac-12 right now, recruiting ranking. So it's bad. But I think, like, USC, if they have to take time and go till later in December to get the right guy, they might do that. Washington could potentially do that as well. So you almost want to, sometimes you have to forego that recruiting class when it's going on because it's not in February. It's now in December. Now, if you get a guy like Jim Mora, like we talked about at the top of the show, he can help that recruiting class immensely by getting out there and recruiting right away. I'm guessing, like, you would like it to happen soon after the season. Now, USC season just got extended because they had to play Cal now on December 4th. And if you think about it, the season ends, right? Okay, Oregon and Utah are sort of getting punished a little bit on the recruiting front. If they make, let's say they both make the championship game. So December 3rd, they're not playing at home. They got to go to Vegas. Now they can come back for Saturday because they play on Friday night. But there's only two official visit weekends you can have before the early signing period. So that weekend, December 3rd, and then the weekend, December 10th. December 15th starts the early signing period. So if you're playing the championship game, you sort of get screwed. You can't be at home to host recruits. Now, I guess you could do it later. You could start it on Saturday or whatever. But usually those things start on Friday or even Thursday. You can't do that if you're, let's say it's Oregon and Utah. Well, USC and Cal now can't. Well, Cal could because they're doing home. But USC can't either because they're going to do a road game. The timing is so compact. So I would think you're shooting for that first week of December if you can do it, if you can't do it earlier than that. But not everyone's going to be done with their jobs. And the better your coach you are, the more season you would have left. So, I mean, it's a great question. I just don't know at this point because, you know, if you're waiting for someone and, you know, maybe you can announce that a deal is done and you've agreed to it and let them finish out the season. But if not, like, you could be waiting. And if you're waiting for an NFL guy, crap, like, you could be waiting, you know, late January or something. So that's obviously not ideal. And if you can get, you know, if you're going to miss that first early signing period, at least you can try to salvage some of it with the late signing period in February, the more traditional one. But you got to convince some guys to maybe not sign. And then you can find other guys. And, of course, the transfer portal is a big part of that. But thank you for the email. I just want to give a shout out to Kevin. On the Pac-12 podcast website, we did have a wrong link to, I think, our show that recapped week 9 and previewed week 10. We had the previous week. And I know not everyone uses that. Most people have their app. But Kevin did not. So, Kevin, thank you for pointing that out. I did end up fixing that. So, thank you. Why don't we do – we have one more voicemail and then a couple more emails.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I'd say this question is probably for Ryan. Just I've heard him talk about reading stuff from The Athletic in the past. But I was just wondering, you know, based on some of the stuff that's been written about Jimmy Lake's tenure at the University of Washington and then stuff that came out earlier in the year about Clay Helton's tenure, I was wondering – who do you guys think was, I guess, the more inept coach or I guess, the bigger idiot? Because, you know, all joking aside about Clay Helton, he was able to produce some decent seasons at USC and put together some okay recruiting classes despite that pretty bad 2020 year. And the kind of sense that I got was that Clay Helton was kind of ready to admit that he didn't know everything and was willing to go out and get a better recruiting staff or a better coordinator. And a lot of that stuff doesn't seem like it applied at all to Jimmy Lake. So I was wondering if it's possible that Clay Helton was not the dumbest coach in the Pac-12 this year. Thanks, guys.
thanks, Perk. Good one. I mean, it's hard to compare because, you know, USC just sort of had – you can half-ass it at USC and still, you know, end up in a Rose Bowl. And you could – you know, that year, the USC won the Rose Bowl. They had Sam Darnold, you know. They had a bunch of guys that are, you know, gone to the NFL, and they're 1-3. They get blown out by Alabama to start the season, and they end up beating Colorado, who won the South. They end up beating Washington on the road, who went to the playoffs, and then they beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl. And just for that alone, I think you're going to say you give Clay Helton the edge, but he has a lot of advantages, and a lot of that was just USC. It was just like Sam Darnold being him and stuff that, you know, maybe you wouldn't get that guy if you were at Washington. If you put Jimmy Lake in, like, Clay Helton's shoes, you know, maybe he has that same kind of success, maybe he doesn't. I would just say there's more of a track record for Clay Helton, so I probably would give him the benefit of the doubt. Both, you know, I think both have been like Peter principled up. Neither one of them should have been head coaches, in my opinion, like where they were. Maybe other places. I think where Clay Helton is right now at Georgia Southern, that's where his first head coaching job should have been. I don't know if Jimmy Lake's first head coaching job should have been at Washington, you know, prove it somewhere else. Because when you get your first head coaching job as at a prestigious place like Washington, you're learning on the job. You're definitely learning. Is that where you want to have someone learning on the job? Like, I'd much rather bring someone that's been a head coach before, because everyone we hear about, even Jim Mora talked about this, where, you know, hey, I learned a lot from that. And then my time away, like, sometimes you might fail at something, right? But you feel like you were doing it right. Like, oh, I didn't do so well. but this was wrong and that was wrong and that wasn't my fault and blah, blah, blah. And you could say, if Jim Moore was saying all those things about what was going on at UCLA, if Rick Neuheisel was like, oh, then my gloves or whatever. Not Rick Neuheisel, but this was like Jim Moore's first, you know, college head coaching job. And then no one's hiring him for 4 years. And he said this on the interview, then you start looking at like, well, is it everyone else or is it me? And I think he came to the realization, hey, it's me. And I don't think you get that until you have experience. And so I'm sure, you know, Jimmy Lake had some thoughts about, you know, run the damn ball and stuff like stuff that's not modern college football. Like there's teams that run the ball, but there's not going to like, we're all just going to run the ball and play defense. Like it's not going to work. Like it doesn't work anywhere. It's just not the way football is now. And I think if he got another head coaching opportunity, maybe he wouldn't realize that. But he only was there for 2 years, so maybe he doesn't have time to sort of realize that. That's why you don't – it's tough to get a head coaching job when you're, you know, at a prestigious place because you're going to learn. There's things you don't know about being a head coach because you've never been one. I'd rather see someone learn, you know, at Toledo and then, they move up to Kansas State. And then they were great at Kansas State. And then they move up to Washington, something like that, where you've learned at the different spots. And there's new challenges. Now you're in a big city. You're in Seattle versus a college town. And now you're at a top 15-ish job as opposed to a top 30 job. And, you're different recruiting grounds, all that kind of stuff. I think you want to be able to learn from that. But anyway, long story short, yeah, I would go – as far as you were putting some kind of idiot scale on it, I think I would – Jimmy Lake, I think, would be on top of Clay Helton at this point. But both of them, I believe, were sort of Peter principled up to where they got. All right, we got a couple more. We'll let you go. Jay in New York. The subject is JT Daniels. Since we now know that Keaton Slovis is not very good, imagine a world in where after his injury, JT Daniels remains the starting quarterback at USC instead of transferring. Where would USC be today? Better, worse? Would Clay still be coaching? So Jay, I have I have pretty strong feelings about this, and I feel like a lot of fans will just instantly go to the quarterback. You're like, look, see, he sucks, or oh, see, he's good. JT Daniels, I think, would have been good when he got hurt in 2019 in the first year of Graham Harrell's offense at USC. I mean, they had four NFL wide receivers. They just were better, and like people didn't really know what to expect. It was like this new thing, like, oh, what, you know, how do we stop this? Let's play man-to-man against these four NFL wide receivers. And no, it didn't work. I think Keaton Slovis or JT Daniels would have had a big year in 2019. There was a lot of people that were just like, as soon as Slovis takes over, like, oh, he's the greatest. JT sucks. And I was like, I don't think JT sucks. He was sucky the year before because he was in a horrible offense in college. Are you going to blame him for that? No. I mean, I think they liked him at Georgia. Now he's not starting anymore at Georgia, but like he showed some, you know, great capabilities when he was down there. We'll see if we see him more as Georgia tries to make their run at a national championship. But didn't it say that, well, now Slovis isn't any good? Well, what was he in 2019? He was great. He looked amazing. He threw for 400 yards a few times. He was the preseason all Pac-12 quarterback coming into 2021. And I think if you put JT Daniels in there all year, he does the same. He would have been great in 2019, and he'd be terrible in 2021 because USC's offense is terrible. The scheme, personnel, all that stuff. Like, they're just not as good, especially without Drake London. And I think you're going to see the same thing with Jackson Dart. I like him as a player. People get super excited about him. But swapping out Dart for Slovis is not fixing this offense, in my opinion. This is more about people have caught up with Graham Harrell. He's not made adjustments. He's not been able to do things without like great, great players out there. And it's sort of the same thing that's been USC's offensive woes for a while, where you're relying on amazing players to make amazing plays. You're not scheming people open. You're not making it so like everyone's looking this way and then, the tight end sneaks out the back and we hit him on a 20-yard like out or whatever and he makes a big play. Like, no, it's more about you're throwing the ball up to great athletes. Drake London, I think he still leads the nation in contested catches. Like, that's great for him that he's had more contested catches than anybody. But why is he having so many contested catches? Like, he's really good. Shouldn't he be open more? Like, should he have less contested? Like, and but no, because their offense has been just like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. Oh, he's covered. Well, throw it to him anyway, and if he makes an amazing play, then we'll move the chains. Otherwise, we're going to punt. And that's sort of with a bait in USC. So I wouldn't say, like, Clay Helton's sticking around if JT Daniels stuck around. He's looked bad in bad offenses. I think he looked good in good offenses. Slovis, the same thing. He looked good in a good offense. He's, or at least good personnel and you know, an offense that everyone hadn't figured out yet. Now he looks bad. But I think JT Daniels will look bad. My guess is Jackson Dart's not going to look all that great on Saturday against UCLA. But, you know, we'll see. But thanks, Jay, in New York, for that one. And one last one. It's a text message. Wasn't signed, but sending my love to you, Dave, and to your whole family during this dreadful time. Take care of yourself, man. And I know that there are people out here wishing you well. I'm sorry, he says, and know that there are people out here wishing you well. And yes, thank you for that text. Definitely people are out here wishing Dave well, myself included. And he's, you know, he'll be fine. He's got UCLA basketball that he's going to be all excited about and stuff. But apologize to everyone out there that we couldn't have Dave on this week, but I think you can understand why that was. But I hope you enjoyed the show. We will be back probably early next week. We're going to try to figure this out. If Dave can't, and I, you know, whatever his schedule is going to be, I just don't know yet, but we'll try to put something out early in the week, either me or him or both or whatever. And we'll get you a show, and hope you enjoy all the Pac-12 games this weekend. Don't forget Friday night game. And then 5 on Saturday, got some rivalry games, a lot of stuff for you all to get to. But thanks, everyone, for writing in, for giving us the 5-star reviews, for signing up at MyBookie with promo code PAC12, the tweets, the emails, texts, voicemails, all that stuff. We do appreciate it. It's crazy how many people have, like, you know, gravitated towards the show and listen to our little dog and pony thing. So we appreciate all of you for doing that. But for David, I am Ryan. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.